The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Friday. Yeah, the weekend is here. But it is now 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and the government runs out of money at midnight. Yeah. And our wonderful senators are currently on the floor, moments ago, debating Bernie Sanders' amendment, it appears, to include in this COVID, they call it a stimulus package. It's not stimulus. It's a survival package. It certainly is not a stimulus. But he is asking to please put in a $1,200 payment to working adults because we need it. And actually, he said, you know, even $1,200 is not enough.
Several months ago, I introduced legislation along with Senator Kamala Harris, now our vice president-elect, and Senator Markey, that would, during the course of this economic crisis, provide $2,000 a month to every working class person in this country. And frankly, that is exactly what we should be doing.
It is exactly what we should be doing, right? But Bernie, I tuned in the middle of it. I didn't realize he was doing that until it crossed my Twitter feed. And I tuned in, and here's just a little bit. This segment runs about 15 minutes. I'm not going to play the whole thing. But I could go in, I could cue into any portion of this 15-minute segment, and it'll be prime Bernie doing what he does best. Sticking up for us, you and me.
Members of Congress should also be aware that we are far behind other major countries in terms of protecting working families.
This is what I was talking about yesterday,
pandemic.
Right?
Not only does every other wealthy country guarantee health care to all people as a human right, almost all of them are providing far more generous benefits to the unemployed and the struggling in their countries than we are doing in our country.
Yes, they are.
Madam President, several months ago, I introduced legislation.
Oh, this is the clip I just played.
Senator Kamala Harris, now our vice president-elect.
I just played that part. But again, he went on for 15 minutes. Then Ron Johnson jumped in again to object. Now, let me tell you what happened earlier today, where Ron Johnson shut down Josh Hawley's request for $1,200 in individual payments. Yes, Bernie Sanders, as progressive as he is, regularly works across the aisle if he can find common ground with a Republican who will work with him on this. And on the issue of direct payments to people who are hurting in this pandemic, he found common ground with Josh Hawley, who's one of the most reprehensible members of the Senate. But so Josh Hawley spoke earlier, tried to get consent to pass a bill with $1,200 checks to all Americans. But Ron Johnson of Wisconsin opposed due to the debt. Seriously? Oh, we got to get Stephanie Kelton back on the show because the debt is nonsense. The deficit is nothing we need to worry about. Read Stephanie Kelton's book, The Deficit Myth. It is a non-issue at this point. Right now, the government prints the money. It's there. They can do it. But they're putting up these artificial barriers. So Ron Johnson opposed due to the debt. Hawley was starting to get frustrated with the dragged out negotiating. He said, quote, I'd like to see some indication of what we're moving towards with relief. So far, we've now been in the dark for days on end. We have absolutely no idea what's actually in this package. So I'm not willing to allow a continuing resolution to go through until I know what's actually in the package. It's beginning to reach the point of absurdity. It's time for leadership to put on the table what they've got. It's time for them to brief members about what they've got. And apparently, and again, I wasn't following it all day, so I don't know the progression of how it went. But when I tuned in, it was shortly after 4 o'clock. There was Bernie. Here, let me go in. Okay. So let me play this part for you. So Ron Johnson, again, came on after Bernie's, the 15 minutes that I heard. And I don't know. He speaks out of his ass. I don't know what he was saying. And then Bernie came back. And I actually caught this in midstream, too. But again, here's his plea.
Senator from Wisconsin voted for a bloated military budget, $740 billion. That's okay.
Yeah, he did.
Senator from Wisconsin supports hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in corporate welfare.
Yeah, he does.
Well, Senator from Wisconsin threw out some numbers. Let me throw out some other numbers. Half of the people in this country are living paycheck to paycheck. Millions of workers are trying to survive on starvation wages of 10 or 12 bucks an hour.
Whoops.
On starvation. 90 million people are uninsured or underinsured, can't afford to go to a doctor. 19 million families spending half of their limited incomes on housing. Madam President, today we have the most severe hunger crisis in America.
Yeah, we do.
That we have had in decades. Children in this country are going hungry, while 500,000 people are homeless, and many millions more fear eviction.
It's sickening.
Today, as a result of the pandemic, not only do we have the worst healthcare crisis in 100 years, but the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. So, Madam President, I say to my colleague from Wisconsin, yeah, I will not support proposals that do not provide a nickel in unemployment benefits, not a nickel in direct relief to tens of millions of low-income and middle-income families.
You go, Bernie.
So, Madam President, I would hope very much that this Congress appreciates the pain that is out there, and that instead of worrying about tax breaks for billionaires or corporate welfare, let's pay attention to the needs of working families and let us pass legislation which includes $1,200 direct payment to working class families, as we did in the CARES Act,
yep.
$500 to their kids, and certainly not taking a nickel away from unemployment and the other important provisions that are currently being negotiated. Thank you, Madam President.
Yeah, and that is Bernie Sanders. And, you know, there's a reason people like me still revere him, because of who he is, because he's been fighting this fight for decades. He has never let up, and he's still at it. And this is going to bring us to today's guest. And you know, look, I've been singing this song for a while now, but I'm thrilled. I mean, more than I can adequately express, that Donald Trump's time in office is dwindling down. Although I got to say, it's kind of frightening, because it seems the closer we get to January 20th, the more off kilter he becomes, the more unhinged, the more crazy, the more frightening his actions are. And I'll get into some of that in a minute, because something I know. Look, I'm going to veer off here for a second. Something. Let me tell you about this, and then I'll get back to Bernie in a second and what's going on here and what we're going to get to later on in the show. This story was broken, I guess, early this morning by Axios. And it is terrifying when you think about, you know, that Donald Trump has the nuclear football, has the nuclear codes, can still, you know, in the 35 days or whatever is left, that he can still do mega damage. 32 days, 19 hours, 5 minutes, 5 seconds, if my countdown clock is right. Here's what Axios reported this morning. Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller, And let me jump in again, because in the recent weeks since the election, Donald Trump purged the Department of Defense of most of its civilian, leadership, and put in his political appointees. These are all cronies. The defense secretary, I'm drawing a blank right now, he fired. And this guy, Chris Miller, is a Trump flunky. Got no business being in that position. So back to the Axios report. It says Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller ordered a Pentagon-wide halt to cooperation with the transition of President-elect Biden, shocking officials across the Defense Department, senior officials tell Axios. Administration officials left open the possibility cooperation would resume after a holiday pause. The officials were unsure what prompted Miller's action or whether President Trump approved. Excuse me? Let me keep reading. It says Miller's move, which stunned officials throughout the Pentagon, was the biggest eruption yet of animus and mistrust toward the Biden team from the top level of the Trump administration. A senior Defense Department official sought to downplay the move, calling it a, quote, simple delay of the last few scheduled meetings until after the new year. What? So from another source, I found this. President-elect Joe Biden's transition team expressed concern Friday about what it described as an abrupt halt in cooperation with the Defense Department. The Pentagon said it was rescheduling meetings with the transition team originally planned for Friday until after the new year. But it insisted the change was part of a, quote, mutually agreed pause for the holiday season. A Biden transition official told reporters, quote, let me be clear. There was no mutually agreed upon holiday break. And to make it even scarier, this happens just as we realize the scope of this hacking, the Russian. Let me find my story on this. They can't say it definitively, but they know it, that this is a major cyber attack from all indications point to Russia. Right. Donald Trump has not said word one about it. Not one word about. And the thing is that's so scary is they targeted lots of federal agencies. The Department of Homeland Security's cyber arm, which, by the way, Trump fired the head of, remember him, Krebs, Christopher Krebs, because he dared to say that this election, the 2020 November election, was the most secure we've had in years and that there was no sign of widespread voter fraud. So Trump fired him. That's the guy who ran CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. They're saying that this attack is far broader than officials thought. it goes to, it says, the compromised software program SolarWinds isn't the only way hackers infiltrated networks, and those responsible may have used tactics, techniques, and procedures that have not yet been discovered. The news just escalates already growing concern about the scale and scope of the breach, which the agency says poses a grave risk to the federal government and other areas of the private and public sectors. Apparently, this hack has been in place since March. And now we're learning that it's not just, you know, a handful of agencies. It's at least a dozen or more, as well as many corporations in the private sector. This thing is huge and it's dangerous. And Trump has not said a word publicly about it. Joe Biden has promised that, let me see if I can find it. He said, after hearing a statement on Thursday from that CISA agency, Joe Biden warned that his administration would impose substantial costs on those responsible. He said, quote, a good defense isn't enough. We need to disrupt and deter our adversaries from undertaking significant cyber attacks in the first place. And then added, I will not stand idly by in the face of cyber assaults on our nation. This is scary. This is really, really dangerous. God, I had a clip of Mitt Romney commenting on it. And, you know, as much as I was not a, you know, an R Money fan, I'm glad he's in the Senate right now because we need his voice pushing back. And this is what he had to say about Trump's inaction.
A cyber hack of this nature is really the modern equivalent of almost of Russian bombers reportedly flying undetected over the entire country. And they didn't drop bombs, but they had the capacity to show that our defense is extraordinarily inadequate, that our cyber warfare readiness is extraordinarily weak, that they think so little of our ability to fight back from a cyber standpoint that they do this with impunity. So our national security is extraordinarily vulnerable. And in this setting, not to have the White House aggressively speaking out and protesting and taking punitive action is really, really quite extraordinary.
It is. Extraordinary is the word. Reprehensible is also. So we're effectively at war. We have been attacked in a major way, it looks like, from Russia. And the president of the United States has nothing to say about it. And the Department of Defense is saying we're not going to brief the incoming administration on what's happening until after the new year. No, that's not OK. That's not OK. I don't know what else to say. Somebody do something. And I don't know who that somebody is. But this, I mean, this sounds to me like treason. It sounds to me like the president of the United States is allowing the Russian president or dictator, whatever you want to call him, to have his way with the United States of America. You know why? Because Donald Trump wants a Moscow Trump Tower. I guess he left the door open for these attacks. They have been inside our systems since March. And not one word from Donald Trump about it. Instead, his Twitter account is still, "I won! I won! They stole the votes! Go the fuck away already! I am so goddamn sick of this loser!" All right, I need to calm down. And I find that music has ways to soothe my savage breast. That's how the saying really goes. So let's do this, and we'll come back on the other side, and I'll tell you all about Norman Solomon and No Honeymoon and the article that he wrote for Common Dreams that is headlined Bernie Sanders and Our Winter of Progressive Discontent. We'll speak with Norman Solomon in a few minutes. But first, this little musical respite from a guy named Philip Markle. Never heard him before. Found him today, and he's parodying the late, great Leonard Cohen. And, you know, one of the best songs ever written, Hallelujah. But he changed the words a little bit. Take it away, Philip Markle.
They said there was a secret ring where pedos hide and pizzas fling. But you don't really care for children, do ya? Like this, it's truth versus myth, democracy that we stand with. To the fallen one we chant, you're a loser, you're a loser, you're a loser, you're a loser. Saw them call it on Fox News. Kornacki's math and logic overthrew ya. Fuck QAnon, no one cares. The demon rats won fair and square. And from our lips we chanted, you're a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. Joe, kick him out. house door. You've seen this room, you've walked this floor. We used to feel alone before we knew ya. And I've seen that mask cover your face. There's hope again since you've won this race. The future's bright as we sing, Trump's a loser. Trump's a loser. What a loser. He's a loser. Total loser. And caught between a porno shop, a crematorium, Rudy won't stop. Don't let the name Four Seasons fool ya. America, we must move on. If you don't think so, check loser.com. It's all further proof that you're a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser.
Markle. Good stuff, huh?
The grift goes on. The grift goes on. Trump keeps fleecing suckers for his con. What a lot of bunk. What a lot of junk. Raising money for that Georgia Sprint. But when you examine the fine print, Trump gets to keep nearly all the dough. So the GOP is fighting itself, to which we say, oh no. And the grift goes on. The grift goes on. Scrambling for bucks cause his accounts are overdrawn. This is nothing new. It's what he always do. He claimed he'd run the country like his companies. Turns out that's one promise he kept with ease. He caused all sorts of failures in our nation. Like Trump University, Trump Wine, Trump Steak, Trump Vodka, Trump Casinos, and the Trump Foundation. Still the grift goes on. The grift goes on. Tweeting nonsense till his account is gone. What a lot of sleaze. Wild conspiracies. Trump's pals special treatment on display. Proving it's not true, crime doesn't pay. While Rudy's lawsuits fail or go away. The grift goes on. The grift goes on. While Trump's cabinet causes a scandal marathon. On ethics they all stop. He didn't drain the swamp. And the grift goes on. Yeah, the grift goes on. Trump's brazenness is a real phenomenon. Like a mafia boss. And the grift goes on. He'll profit from a loss.
Yeah, the grift goes on.
And the grift goes on.
Yeah, the grift goes on.
Yeah, the grift goes on.
Yeah.
And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. So that was Lauren Mayer doing her best Sonny and Cher. And the video is wonderful. I hadn't even seen it before I played it because she sent it out right before I went on the air. But she plays both Sonny and Cher in that video and does them justice. And ahead of that, the take on Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, that was pretty awesome by a guy named Philip Markle. I will post both of those videos, as I do every time I play one of those songs, on the blog where I post the podcast. Today will be under today's date. It's NicoleSandler.com/12-18-20. And again, my show's not behind a paywall. You can share it with anyone. And hopefully they might like what they hear and they'll come and want to contribute to what we do and all that. All right. So before we took a break, do I have any Christmas parodies dissing Trump? Yeah. Well, and we'll get, you know, I will be here, just so you know, programming note, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. I may be here Thursday of next week. Frankly, I'm going to leave it up to Howie Klein as to whether or not he wants to do the show because it's Thursday. If not, I may take Christmas Eve off. I'll take Christmas Day off. I'll probably do a music show like I did for Thanksgiving that will stream audio only. But you can always get that at NicoleSandler.com on the Listen Live page. What else? And the following week, I'll be here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and also filling in for Brad Friedman at the Brad blog. So I'm here. I'm here for the duration, not like I'm going anywhere. Okay, so I told you that we're going to speak today with Norman Solomon. Norman Solomon is the founder, co-founder and director of Roots Action, one of many great progressive groups who, puts forth progressive ideals. And right now, we've been covering this all week, from the game on Monday to yesterday with Eva Putsova and her Catch Fire organization. This is all about keeping progressives energized. So Norman Solomon actually wrote an article that I will also post on my blog that appears in Common Dreams at commondreams.org. It went up just a couple of days ago. And the headline reads, Bernie Sanders and our winter of progressive discontent. And let me read you the subheadline, because and I keep looking over because Norman's going to be joining us any moment now. He wrote, while Sanders is ill-positioned and uninclined to push back very hard against the evident trajectory of Biden's decisions, many progressives are starting to throw down gauntlets against the corporate and militaristic aspects of the incoming presidency. And so he talks about the Bernie Sanders infrastructure that was very strong during two presidential runs. And let me just share with you a paragraph. He writes, at this point, Sanders and avid supporters of the Bernie 2020 campaign have ample reasons to feel frustrated, even, quote, enormously insulted. It's small comfort that Biden's picks so far are purportedly, quote, not as bad as Obama's were 12 years ago. That's a low bar, especially to those who understand that Barack Obama heavily corporatized his presidency from the outset. And given the past decade political migration among Democrats and independents at the grassroots, Biden's selections have been even more out of step with the party's base. So he goes on from there. But what he's saying is, here's what I was looking for. At this juncture, while Sanders is ill-positioned and uninclined to push back very hard against the evident trajectory, what I read to you, the poll quote, many progressives are starting to throw down gauntlets against the corporate and militaristic aspects of the incoming presidency. While the lunacy of the Trumpian GOP is nonstop and corporate Democrats have control of party top-down power levers, the broad Democratic left is now stronger, better funded, and better networked than it has been in many decades, with greatly enhanced electoral capabilities or capacities, as well as vitality of its social movements. So it's with that as a backdrop that I want to play for you the video that launched the No Honeymoon for Biden campaign. So again, this comes from Roots Action. The new website is nohoneymoon.org. And, well, let's have a listen. Here we go.
CNN, Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States.
No honeymoon. What do we mean by that? We mean that we, the people, hold the power, that we must continue to fight for what is just, right, and good, and fight against what is not just, right, and good. We mean that we must have solidarity and commitment one to another. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. What do we mean by that? That as long as there are injustices, we will continue to fight. What do we mean by that? We know that when everyday people put a little extra on their ordinary, extraordinary things happen.
The pressure on Biden starts now. We are holding him accountable because we got him elected.
We will continue to pursue those things that lift and edify. And we will reject those things that do not. We mean that we will not be seduced by smiles. We need action, and we need it right now. We will not relent. And that's what we mean when we say no honeymoon.
End the wars, universal health care, fight for 15, racial justice, cancel student debt, Green New Deal, nohoneymoon.org. And with that, I'm thrilled to bring Norman Solomon back to the show. Hey, Norman, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Nicole. Howdy.
Hi. So this is a great idea. So we spoke before the election and we talked about, you know, vote Trump out. And then you were very clear. We're not going to be done at that point. That's the first part of the exercise here. The second part is in effect now, and it's no honeymoon for Biden. We need to hold him accountable to those of us who actually made it possible for him to win.
Absolutely. Progressives around the country made a huge difference, and it's very clear young people who are overwhelmingly progressive voted for Bernie Sanders in record numbers in the primary. They were the difference. Now, every vote counted, so we appreciate every vote, especially in swing states that defeated the awful Donald Trump. And as you say, Nicole, you know, at rootsaction.org, we had the Vote Trump Out campaign, always with the explicit understanding that this is necessary but not sufficient. So thank goodness we're talking now about challenging Biden because we didn't want to be up against the wall of Trump another 4 years. That said, there are all those issues that you beautifully reeled off in real time, those six issues that are put at the bottom at the end of the 90-second wonderful Nina Turner video from No Honeymoon. And that is really a calling to all of us to say, now is the time. This is a historic moment. And, you know, briefly, whatever we can say about the virtues of the Clinton and Obama administrations, there were real downsides too.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that happened was in 1993, in January, a lot of Wall Street people came into the Clinton administration. January of 2009, a lot of Wall Street people came into the Obama administration, and in the latter case, it didn't help people with their houses underwater, but it sure helped Wall Street. So
yeah,
we're going to do it different this time. Third time will be different.
Okay, so let me back up a second. I read a little bit from a piece that you published earlier in the week at Common Dreams that the headline was Bernie Sanders and Our Winter of Progressive Discontent, in which you acknowledge Bernie for bringing us to this point. I mean, seriously, he stepped up when he was needed and reframed the conversation. We wouldn't be talking about Medicare for all if not for Bernie Sanders. I don't think we'd be talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage. And today, they wouldn't have been fighting on the Senate floor for $1,200 relief checks to the American people after we've gotten the shaft, frankly, from our government for the last 10 months. It's astounding. I ran down a list yesterday of what other countries, how they're supporting their people, and it's embarrassing. Yeah. It seems like the contempt with which they're treating us. And Ron Johnson today objected to $1,200 because of the debt. I mean, it's ridiculous. So we owe Bernie a debt of gratitude. But as you point out in this article, Norman, he's done what he can. And now it's sort of the time for the organizations that have built up around him to step up and take the lead. And that's part of what this is about, is it?
Oh, very much. It's the organizers, it's the activists, it's the groups around the country. It's also many media outlets, including the Cole Sandler Show, that are picking up the torch, that are seeing this is a long-term, multi-year, really multi-decade effort that we're in the middle of. There's a wonderful statement that Nina Turner, the former Ohio State Senator, the former national co-chair of the Bernie 2020 campaign, has mentioned many times. She puts it this way. Senator Sanders was the spark. We are the flame. And there's a lot of big flames in this country, and they're coming from the grassroots. And we've made a big impact. We're going to make a bigger impact. And we have voices already in Congress that didn't sort of float from outer space and drop onto Capitol Hill. They got there because of grassroots, because people thought, well, we've got our feet on the ground, but we've got our eyes on the horizon. We know that there are incumbents like Elliot Engel that we don't want in there, like Congressman Crowley. So now we have AOC in there. Mm-hmm. We have coming in next month, Jamal Bowman. We have Cori Bush coming in from St. Louis. We have Rashida Tlaib from Detroit. Yeah. These are members of the squad and future members of the squad. And this is a really important messaging and also a power differential that we're bringing to bear. As you said, and I think you're quite right, how outrageous that we even have to fight for decent income for people at the time of a pandemic.
Right. I mean, there are so many people who can't work because their places of business are shut down. Others who can't leave their homes, hello, because they have, other medical conditions. I don't leave the house. I haven't left except to go to a doctor's appointment since March. Luckily, I have a home studio so I can work from here. But millions of people are in danger of losing their homes. I keep seeing stories day after day after day of elderly people saying, I got an eviction notice. I got nowhere to go. What am I supposed to do? Yeah. And you have Ron Johnson, who is one of the most wealthy members of Congress, saying the debt. Sorry. $600. Give them $600. What is $600 in a one time payment going to do for anybody? We're hurting. And this shouldn't even be an issue. The United States of America is the wealthiest nation on the planet. And one in five children, it's probably higher than that, now goes to bed hungry in this country.
In this context, if we took it to another environment in our society, another community level, we would call people like Senator Johnson sociopaths.
Yeah.
We would say that they have no feeling. They have no empathy. It's all about them. They have not the most elementary human connection to other people's pain and suffering. That is the Republican Party. And there's no doubt that whatever we do, we have to include in our agenda defeating every Republican we possibly can. That's one part of the equation, fighting the racists, the nativists, the misogynists, those who have found their putrid sewer of the Republican Party of 2020. The other part of that is we've got to fight for a progressive agenda and be effective in fighting for it. And often in the corporate media, those are given as either or, fork in the road, where actually I think what we've experienced is quite the opposite, that when you give ground to the right, when you become more of a moderate party, you end up in a situation where you empower them because you don't offer an alternative to phony, pseudo-populist anger at the grassroots. If you don't open another door for that anger, they're going to go through the door of that ugly, racist, misogynist Trumpism that we've been experiencing over the last 4 years. And I think what Bernie Sanders has been doing and many others at the grassroots and more in Congress have been doing is saying, we're going to open that progressive door.
Yeah. And well, and it's so important now that we, I hate to put it in these terms, but stake our claim and stake our claim in our, in this territory, because the Republican Party is split. Right. Well, the Democratic Party split, too. But that's, you know, we're not split as badly as they are. They had Trump and his minions and the QAnon people. And that just we thought the teabaggers were crazy. This takes crazy to a whole other level. Yeah. And so you had a good faction, a good portion of the centrist Republicans, the reasonable Republicans, as if there were such a thing, all of a sudden say, I'm not with them anymore. They became the never Trumpers. Well, now some of them are becoming Democrats. Steve Schmidt earlier this week said, I know I left the Republican Party. I am now a Democrat. I'm a single issue voter. It's about democracy. But make no mistake, Steve Schmidt is a Republican in terms of ideology. But what he and the other never Trumpers, who, by the way, have gotten a bigger and bigger footprint on MSNBC with each passing day, are doing is trying to do a takeover of the Democratic Party. We'll be the centrist party. Well, wait a minute. We've been here. We progressives, we are the Democratic Party. And therefore, I think it's incumbent on us to get into the party structure as much as possible and say, this is our territory. They're Republicans. If they want to start a new party, let them. But the Democratic Party cannot become Republican light. And that's what I fear is their game plan.
I think what you just said is extremely important and hasn't yet dawned on nearly enough progressives and people who might not call themselves progressives, but they're mainline Democrats. They would maybe identify with liberal or moderate liberal. They don't realize, unfortunately, quite often, and the news media aren't helping them to realize, the dangerous aspects of this migration from some very big name, well, people like Max Boot at The Washington Post. George Will is no longer Republican. Great. If you want to reject Republicans, fine. That doesn't mean that, as you say, Nicole, that we embrace the ideology that they bring into the Democratic Party when they bring themselves into the Democratic Party. These are people who want to cut Social Security and Medicare. Often they don't even support the basics of a woman's right to choose.
Right.
There's a whole litany of agenda items that they want to bring into the Democratic Party with themselves. And part of that, and we're seeing this now from the very highly funded and now dangerous Lincoln Project, they are proclaiming, they get on the networks, they're using their money and their platforms to say, watch out for those progressives in the Democratic Party, watch out for the Bernie Sanders forces. So we certainly want unity against Republicans. At the same time, we don't want unity that shuts down the progressive power that has made every change possible that we should be proud of.
In fact, you know, I love AOC. I think she's amazing. I think she's injected energy into the party that was sorely needed. I think she's a, you know, a great a successor to Bernie Sanders, along with a number of others who you mentioned and more. Pramila Jayapal has taken over the Progressive Caucus in the House. There's a lot. We've got a good bench right now, but there's a bit of a power struggle. I thought AOC was spot on the other day when she said it's time for Democratic leadership to turn over. I've been saying this for years. It's nothing new. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and James Clyburn. And look, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. I wish he was our president-elect. It's not an ageist issue. It's an issue of being out of touch with the times. And Pelosi, Hoyer, and Clyburn certainly are. And James Clyburn actually had the nerve to say in an interview I heard recently, we're the future of the Democratic Party.
They're the past. They're the past, and they're hanging on by their fingernails to the past.
Hello. And so AOC had the nerve to say, I think we need a change in leadership. Well, because of that, I guess it was between her and some other blue dogish kind of congressperson for a seat on the energy committee. I'm forgetting the exact title of the committee, but an important committee position. And basically, there was a coup attempt against AOC. So they decimated her. This all came from Nancy Pelosi.
She's extremely strong hand on the Democratic caucus.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're stuck with her, it looks, because what AOC said is they have not groomed the next generation of leaders to come up and step in. Thankfully, AOC defeated Joe Crowley, who would have stepped in to become speaker if she hadn't. But, you know, this is Nancy Pelosi deals in retribution, I think, and vindictiveness in the caucus. If you're not with me, you're against me. Well, that's not party unity. How about we work together to promote progressive ideals and democratic ideals rather than this nonsense.
I remember in 1988, and I think it applies not always, but certainly in this context of the House, where Jesse Jackson spoke to the Democratic National Convention, and he said, it takes two wings to fly. But the Steny Hoyers and the Nancy Pelosis and the power structure of the House, even worse than in the Senate, because we've had Chuck Schumer move a little bit in a progressive direction. Nancy Pelosi is not moving in a progressive direction at all. She has PAYGO, which is a straitjacket for spending for social programs. We never could have had a New Deal if we had PAYGO. You have to have deficit spending as a basic Keynesian economics. But you've got a situation where Nancy Pelosi is insisting that we exclude from the leadership progressive voices. And I know, as you mentioned, Clyburn, who was a major ally, a pivotal ally for Biden in South Carolina, congressman, very long running there and very powerful. He threw his full weight behind Biden, and that was that pivotal primary.
And there are those who say, and looking at the cabinet appointments, Pete Buttigieg might be a nice guy and all, but he is not qualified to be Secretary of Transportation. And it certainly looks like quid pro quo to me, in that he conveniently dropped out, as did a number of the other candidates, right before Super Tuesday, giving Joe Biden a clear path to defeat Bernie Sanders. If that happened...
I mentioned, Nicole, as it happens, as is routinely now the case, we're on the same wavelength. I have a piece that was posted a few hours ago on Salon.com on that very point. It's about Pete Buttigieg. And what I did... this rarely happens to me. I wrote a piece and didn't realize I was writing a piece. I got an email from Pete Buttigieg the night before last, as did many other people, crowing about how he had just become the official nominee for Secretary of Transportation. And I took some red words to insert. I don't know if you remember from Mad Magazine, the old days, they used to have a feature, what they say, what they mean. So I inserted what he meant. Not just what he was saying with his words, and Salon has published it as sort of an annotated, corrected version of Pete Buttigieg's email blast. It's the title of it is the piece is from the desk of Pete Buttigieg, and then in parentheses, corrected. And I think we do need to translate what this messaging is, because you're exactly right. This is a payoff. This is compensation for services rendered. Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, they came in at exactly the right time to stop the Bernie Sanders surge and to help Biden. And the reality is Klobuchar has a job. Now it looks like Buttigieg is getting a job. And can a job for Beto O'Rourke be far behind?
Wait, Klobuchar has a job? Was she given a position?
Well, I think she's got her gig in the Senate.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, and they can't take anyone out of the Senate because we have no room to move. And in fact, you know, Biden's still taking people out of the House. I love that he named Deb Haaland to Interior, but maybe he should have held off on Cedric Richmond.
Oh, well, that's obscene. And unfortunately, Cedric Richmond doesn't require a confirmation in the Senate because progressives will be fighting him like crazy. I mean, what does it take to get across to the Democratic Party establishment that when you have a member of Congress who has taken oodles of money and campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry, maybe you shouldn't give them the job of White House liaison with community groups, including organizations like Sunrise.
Right.
I mean, what is the deal here?
Yeah, it makes no sense. And then again, there's, you know, a bigger affront, I think, is Neera Tanden as director of the OMB when Bernie Sanders, hopefully, if they can pull off these two wins in Georgia, would be chair of the budget committee. Really? And I heard that he didn't even consult with Bernie, and Bernie was nothing but completely helpful and magnanimous and every other adjective I can throw in there to say supportive of Joe Biden's candidacy.
Well, that's right. The Washington Post reported over the weekend, as you just noted, that the Biden transition team didn't even have the decency to let Bernie Sanders know that they were nominating Neera Tanden to be the director of the Office of Management and Budget, where Bernie is the ranking, in effect, Democrat on the Budget Committee of the Senate.
Exactly. So his biggest nemesis, because she's never had a kind word to say about Bernie Sanders. In fact, it's worse than that. She has been hostile to him on many occasions.
It's
not only
hostile.
Not a kind word, it's hostile. And that's just wrong. And so if people wonder why progressives are a little, you know, crazy right now, well, that's why. We need to stake out our territory. So, Norman Solomon, you've launched No Honeymoon, nohoneymoon.org. And what are we going to be doing? What happens?
Well, I really invite people to go, if you haven't already, to nohoneymoon.org. Sign up if you haven't. We'll give you alerts. And it's exactly on point here. Neera Tanden, for instance, will be coming up. She has to come up for Senate confirmation as Director of Office of Management and Budget, a very powerful position. Keep in mind that she has been a loyalist to the Clinton family. She has said on the record that she would do anything for the Clintons. And this is yesterday. This isn't tomorrow for the future of the Democratic Party in the country, all the corporate sleaze that they were part of. And let's face it, that was part of the Clinton ambience. I think that's fair to say. So at No Honeymoon, we are moving forward to say, these appointments need to be evaluated on the basis of content and record. And we're going to be moving through the calendar for the next several weeks. We're going to examine and challenge the nominees for the cabinet coming from the Biden administration. If they're good, we're going to say great.
Yep.
If they're not, we're going to fight them. And then moving on through the year, there are so many different issues. And you mentioned several of them at the end of the video you showed. And people can watch it again at No Honeymoon. .org, canceling student debt, ending the wars, Green New Deal, racial justice, specifically, for instance, mass incarceration. People care, feel deeply about these issues, and at No Honeymoon, we're going to be fighting like hell, both the Republicans and the corporate Democrats, as we need to.
Right. Now, I want to, there's something else that is an aside from this, but, you know, I'm down here in Florida. And back in, I guess, it must have been September, I'm guessing, I got a call from a friend of mine. His name is Mitchell Stolberg, who was the biggest progressive activist here in Broward County, Florida. He ran the Broward PDA chapter. He was part, you know, he ran the Florida Democratic Progressive Caucus, whatever their name is. You know, he was the person, the go-to guy in Broward County. And he asked me, he's like, they're coming up to, you know, elections for DEC. Would you consider being a precinct committee person? Because we need to get into the Democratic Party if we expect them to do anything that we want them to do. And said, you asked, I'm in. And I did it. I was unopposed, so I'm in. Mitchell, unfortunately, died. And so just suddenly. But I'm in. And a number of other progressives around the country, actually, are realizing that you do need an inside-outside strategy. If we expect the Democratic Party to be democratic and be at all progressive, and we want to hold our ground against these never Trumpers who all of a sudden think they can take over the Democratic Party because the Republican Party left them, I think it's important. So we're just getting started. I know there's Democratic executive committee elections and stuff. But, you know, we're hoping to have a progressive voice, certainly for me, inside the Florida Democratic Party. And as I see so many people going, well, the Democrats are horrible. You know, there's nothing Democratic about it. I had a Twitter fight with Jimmy Dore the other day because he referred to it as the Democrat Party. And I asked, why do you use Republican vernacular? It's used as a smear. And some of the people got back to me and said, well, because there's nothing Democratic about that party these days. We need to change that because I don't speak for you here. My problem always with the Green Party or the Working Families Party is they just can't take on the Republican Party. If we want progressive change, our best bet, at least right now in the short term, is to, you know, get a stronghold inside the Democratic Party and make it be what we need it to be.
We have to be realistic and idealistic at the same time. We wouldn't have Rashida Tlaib in Congress if she had declined to run in the Democratic Party.
That's right.
The same would be said for AOC, for Ilhan Omar, for Cori Bush. There are reasons why these progressive champions all ran in the Democratic Party. It's because they want to win. And in 40 years, the Green Party hasn't come close to winning a single seat
Nothing.
In Congress. Yep. That ought to tell us something. Now, we know that the structure is wrong. We know campaign finance is wrong. We know there are so many things that are wrong. We're dealing with structure. And to pretend that we're in a place like Germany, where I've met with the Linke Party, they had 10% of the Bundestag, the parliament there. Great. That's Germany because they have a structure. So let's win, okay? And what you said is absolutely right. We've got to fight inside and outside the Democratic Party.
We do. And so, for the people go, well, every party, they're both bad. Well, you know what? We are Democrats. In a two-party system, which is what we have, whether we like it or not, we're Democrats.
I don't want to mince words here. It is absolute lunacy when people say there's no difference between the Democratic and Republican Party. Look at the Supreme Court.
Hello.
I mean, let's not be gaslighted here. Look at who was appointed to the Supreme Court by Democrats and Republicans. If people say there's not a significant difference, are you saying it doesn't matter if a woman has a right to choose? It doesn't matter if we have all these measures coming down from the Supreme Court that are outrageous? Well, so we've got to be real about this.
Exactly. And look what the Supreme Court did today. I didn't have time to get to it, but they threw out the challenge to Trump's wanting to exclude undocumented immigrants from the census. That's not how the census works, but the Supreme Court is saying, well, they didn't rule in their favor, but they said, well, let's wait and see how this plays out. You have to prove to us that this can't be done. This was the six Republicans on the Supreme Court who did this. This could cost us in every community where there's a big immigrant population of representation and money and resources. This is a travesty.
Yeah, and that's where the Constitution comes in, because basically these right-wingers in the courts are saying the Constitution doesn't matter. We're going to rule the Constitution unconstitutional.
We've got a lot of fights on our hand, and it'll be better if we could fight with the Democratic Party on our side rather than fight against them. And again, this is our party. I've been a registered Democrat for most of my adult life. There was a while I lived in California where I could be no party affiliation and still vote in the primaries. But, this is the time to hunker down and say we're staking our claim here. I reclaim my time. I reclaim my party. And sorry, Never Trumpers and Republicans, it's not yours. And Joe Biden, with all due respect, you say you represent everybody, even those who didn't vote for you. Well, you need to remember that we progressives came out and supported you because you needed us, and we need you now. It works both ways. And that's what this is about.
Yeah, I agree.
Norman Solomon, thank you so much. People can find you at normansolomon.com, on Twitter at Norman Solomon, at rootsaction.org, and of course at nohoneymoon.org. Thank you for all the great work you do and you've done over the years. I so appreciate your work.
Well, thank you, Nicole, for all you're doing.
Thank you. Take care. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we come to the end of another week. Oh, boy. I will be here next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Thursday. I don't know. I'll take Christmas Day off. And the following week, too. So business as usual. I work from home. I'm not going anywhere. It's the COVID. So we'll be here. So plan on hanging out, okay? And maybe I'll paint you a painting. Go visit the pandemic painting page at NicoleSandler.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday with Jason Leopold. All right. Bye.